This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Anthony Scoma. Today, a panel on employment and ethics in times of crisis. Experts on Utah's job market and economy will discuss how COVID-19 exposed and exacerbated existing inequalities, as well as potential solutions for crafting an equitable recovery for all Utahns. In spite of the COVID-19 pandemic, Utah was ranked the strongest economy among all 50 states by the U.S. News & World Report. Utah's April employment report reflects this economic resilience with an unemployment rate of 2.8%, less than half the 6.1% reported for the U.S. as a whole. Due to this small number, Governor Spencer Cox moved to discontinue the federal unemployment program that granted an additional $300 a week to approximately 28,000 Utahns who qualified. Cox says the move is a way to return to normal and believes the market should not be competing with government for workers. The enhanced benefits are set to expire June 26th. Today's panel takes a look at Utah's economic landscape and how ethics can shape better public policy. The panel includes Peter Phillips, professor in the University of Utah's Economics Department, Teresa Foxley, President and CEO of the Economic Development Corporation of Utah, Sylvia Castro, Executive Director of the Suazo Business Center, and Heidi Walker, Chief Operating Officer for the Salt Lake Chamber. Moderating today's panel is Natalie Gochner, Director of the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute. This forum was put on in partnership with the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute and the Daniels Fund in Ethics from the David Eccles School of Business. This forum was recorded on March 15th, 2021. Here's your moderator, Natalie Gochner.
We get to talk about employment today. And Peter, I can think of nobody better to talk to start with than you as a labor economist to just set this up and help us understand the breadth and depth of the pandemic recession.
A little over 10 years ago, there was a great recession, and it was great because it was the biggest drop in employment since the Great Depression of 1930s, and it just overwhelmed us. Yet the pandemic recession was twice as deep as the Great Recession. We lost twice as many jobs as we did in 2008 and 2009. But the amazing thing is the bounce back. It was like a bungee cord where we got ripped right on back up. And we fell so far that it looked like up to us when we came back. But even now, the level of employment in the economy is the same as at the bottom of the Great Recession. There is still a long way to go to get back to where we were. And unlike previous recessions, which economists have characterized as the recessions if the bounce back was quick, or U recessions where the bounce back wasn't a bounce back, but a crawl back. This downturn is being called a K recession. And the reason for that is it's been a bounce back for some and nothing for others. And that creates issues of morality and ethics. Now, morality is something that guides our lives. Ethics is the application of that morality in a context. And the context today is a downturn that is very severe for some and almost over for others. And how do we respond to that?
Thank you, Peter. Teresa, as the leader of the Economic Development Corporation of Utah, you've been behind the scenes helping with the state's response, working through some of these difficult issues. Peter mentioned a K-shaped recovery. Inherently, that means that some are recovering quickly and some are not. Give us your view on this from where you stand as the leader of economic development in our state.
Well, thank you so much to the Hinckley Institute and others for inviting us to participate today. And Peter, thank you very much for the terrific review of how this, the last year now has impacted our economy and particularly our labor economy. We have found, obviously, this K-shaped recovery coming into play in our economic development pipeline, where we have certain industries and certain individuals that have not only recovered, but are surging, and certain individuals and certain industries that continue to sputter and really just hang on for survival in this K-shaped recovery. And for us as an organization that is involved in both the state's response, but hopefully also in the state's long-term recovery efforts, it really highlights a need for organizations like ours to think about ways to crosswalk jobs, opportunities, and reskilling to those at the bottom of the K-shape towards the top of the K-shape. One of the things that's really interesting in economic development that we had going into this pandemic-induced recession was that we had a lack of skilled workers, really along all aspects of the economic ladder, but that sentiment has not changed by employers, that those who are hiring are still having a very hard time matching up employees to specific skill sets, while simultaneously, there are still a number of individuals who would like to go to work, who have suffered greatly as a result of this pandemic, but who lack the skills to get into those jobs at the upper end of the K. And so for us, we are, of course, trying to find ways to partner with our educational organizations and others to think about how individuals will need to reskill and retrain much more rapidly. That's another thing that I mention oftentimes when talking about the pandemic economy is, of course, it has accelerated a number of trends that were already underway and shined a bigger spotlight on those things that we were already experiencing. But this pandemic economy has accelerated the adoption of AI and made this fourth industrial revolution seem like we're really on the forefront of it. And we know that that means that higher skilled individuals who can quickly retrain and learn new things will be in a better position as more and more automation eats away at standard jobs that exist today.
Thank you, Teresa. Heidi, I want to bring you into the conversation, but before I do that, I want to go to Sylvia. Sylvia and I have gotten to know each other quite well over the last few months. It's been great working more closely with you, Sylvia. Sylvia, of course, leads the Suazo Business Center, and you're involved with the development and empowerment of underserved communities. So you've got a real laser focus on that lower part of the K in this recovery. Would you make some introductory comments about what Peter and Teresa have shared and anything else you'd want to add?
So our work is directly, so 501c3, our whole focus has been on the economic development for the underserved communities. And as both Teresa and the professor mentioned, there has been winners and there has been losers. And unfortunately, we work a lot directly with some of the who basically has not come out well out of this pandemic. First of all, we have the small businesses. The small businesses were impacted hugely, but some industries more than others. And one of the hardest things about this pandemic economy is that there was nothing wrong with that business. They were fine, everything was running well. It's just that overnight, everything changed. And unfortunately, it went from some of the restaurants having the best months in February 2020 and then crashing down right after that.
Okay, and so some of the- jump in there. That really rings true with me, right? Nobody did anything wrong here, but they felt consequences.
Right, and that was what's hard, is there was nothing wrong with that business. Everything in terms of that business owner, what they were doing, it's just that overnight, external forces just flipped it. And unfortunately, especially with the minority population, a lot of the industries that were more affected are the type of industries that they're in. Not only were they affected in terms of the small business, all of a sudden the term essential worker changed. All of a sudden having grocery store workers, everything that dealt with dealing with the public for people to be able to make it and survive, all of those folks became essential workers. And a lot of them were heavily minority. And because of that, they were more exposed to it. And this is why in the beginning, as we were looking at the COVID numbers, some of the ones working in the forefront of this, it came as no surprise that the rates of contracted COVID were so disproportionate. The other thing too is that, unfortunately, one of the biggest impact has been on women. Next thing you know, not only did you had to deal with everything changing economic wise, you had to have the kids at home overnight. You had to do your job, had the kids at home. You had to be a teacher, still have your job, and still try to make it out at the same time. And I think that's going to take a while to recover. Mm-hmm. And this is where the term pink economic impact has been mentioned quite a bit. But as we're looking at this K-shaped recovery, what's interesting is as we're looking, as Teresa mentioned, the being able to move people from some of the industries are not coming back to the new ones. One of the hardest things is to realize is that you have to provide safety nets to make that transition. You cannot just tell somebody, hey, you know, you have done this 10 years of your life, just switch over here. It's a risk. And it's really hard to tell somebody to overnight change their whole, everything they knew. And that's part of it, where creating those safety nets to be able to more effectively move people across industries is also part of that recovery effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Sylvia. Heidi, Salt Lake Chamber, I know enough about the chamber to know it's the largest business association in the state. It's statewide. It has all different industries that come together there. Can you summarize how the pandemic has impacted chamber members?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, actually, I'm not happy to, because it's sad. The impact, I think that, you know, during this past year, we've been on a regular basis receiving calls from small businesses, some of them just seriously frozen, not sure which direction to go, waiting for money, looking for opportunities to help them, resources and guidance, how to innovate. And that has been, I think, really heartbreaking to watch that go on and to listen to that and try and be a resource for them or connect them. We actually launched the Main Street Preservation Grants in April of last year, posted those on the coronavirus.utah.gov website. And the stories that came back from that bridge money, this was bridge money funding, about $5,000 that we would give to some of these businesses. And these were targeted at rural minority, some of those tourism businesses as well across the state. We worked with local economic partners and with local chambers to identify those that were in the most need. And the stories that came back is that $5,000 helped them keep 15 people employed at a local remote rural theater for 3 months. I mean, they were in real dire situations and in real need. And so I think listening to these folks in rural areas, some of the, Sylvia and I worked on a couple of those people as well, dealing with these local economic development partners. What I learned was there were so many great people wanting to help, and we were challenged in trying to really help them. You know, this is all new space for all of us. And so the impact has been real. I've been watching some of our caterer friends who've had to really innovate. Their businesses just, you know, were shuttered, a lot of those. And to see them even during the holidays innovating and creating party packages and party gift boxes and doing things they would probably have never done before just to keep their businesses open and just to keep their employees employed. So I think it's been a surprise to all of us just how many people have been really impacted. Sylvia mentioned the pink recession. We've seen that with our Women's Business Center and some of the women's business owners who really have businesses that are impacted, what they're still going through and the efforts that we're trying to make to provide them resources. And just what Teresa was mentioning on the reskilling, this is going to be a whole new world for us.
That was Heidi Walker, Chief Operating Officer for the Salt Lake Chamber. You are listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts, more local shows, and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW. Today, we are airing a panel discussion on COVID-19, the Utah workforce, and the ethics of employment. Here again is your moderator, Natalie Gochner, director of the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute.
I'm not going to just keep going in circles, the same order or anything like that. But Peter, you mentioned something that I think is a really good jumping off point. You said something like morality guides our lives and ethics is the application of that morality. Is that a way that you phrased it?
Morality are general principles. And they're like the North Star that guides our life. Okay. But at any point in time, we're in a context, and how you apply that morality is subject to that context. And that's where ethics come in. It's the application of morality to a context.
Okay.
And we are in a particular context. This is a downturn. Hey, I've been around for a long time. I've been through like 15 downturns. But this downturn, this time, as in every time, this time is different. In this particular case, the downturn has hit women more than men because the downturn hit face-to-face industries more than commodity industries. Historically, construction and manufacturing, which are dominated by male workers, were hit hardest in downturns. This time, it's face-to-face industries that were hit hardest, and those service sector industries have disproportionately more women. So one of the issues of context is that this is a downturn that has affected women more than men, and rubbing salt in the wound, it also affected schooling, so that there was an ethical issue that families faced as to who's going to handle the kids when the kids are coming home. And for the most part, that's meant women. So women faced a double burden, and that's part of the context. And so as families address how they're going to handle the downturn, as education faces how they're going to handle the downturn, as policymakers face how they're going to handle the downturn, considering gender issues is a part of the context that takes us from applying our general principles to the ethics of this economic crisis.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Peter, for the clarity of language there and the way you kind of set that up, the layering and whatnot. So the question I want to ask, and I'll let you guys just volunteer who wants to go first, but what is the obligation of what I'll characterize as the winners? Now, that's a tough term during a pandemic, but we do know that some have actually had a very strong past year. Even during a pandemic, we have some industries, some occupations that have thrived and others that have not. And we've already established that this wasn't anybody's fault. It came seemingly from out of nowhere. So the question is, and I'll let you guys unmic and who wants to go first, but what is the obligation of those who have not suffered as greatly?
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you is the morality that is common to us all. And so each individual has to ask, where am I in this situation and what do I owe because of that? I only speak for myself. I haven't missed a day of work and I haven't missed a paycheck. I'm part of the upward leg of that K. And that tells me I owe more to my students than maybe I did a year or two before. So I made the ethical application of that general principle into a decision that I would back burner my research and I would put to the fore a dedication to my students. So that, for instance, I told the chair of my department, don't cap any of my courses. If a student needs to take this course and for a general ed requirement, I'll teach 200 students and I'll grade those exams and I'll get the time to do that by not doing my research. So because I'm on the upper leg of that K, I would do to my students what I would have others do for me if I was on the lower leg of that K.
Yeah, that's a great way of expressing it, Peter, with a real personal example. Sylvia, it looks like you've got something to share there.
Yes. So one of the things I have always believed in is the right thing to do is also the good economic thing to do. We have winners. We have industries that are doing really well, but they're having an issue of labor. They're having an issue that they cannot hire fast enough. They have an issue of not having trained staff. And this is where, to me, they can be part of the solution. We could use this as an opportunity to reskill, to upskill some other community sections that haven't been as involved when it comes to this. And I think that really hits not just the multicultural, the women, but also rural areas. One of the biggest issues with this pandemic has been digital literacy. And that's something that I think we all agree, all COVID did is take existing inequalities and just made it bigger. And one of them, to me, is one of the things I always bring up is digital literacy. And they can be part of the solution because frankly, it helps them. It helps them to be able to get the labor they require. And it also helps them to ensure that the economic remains stable, but being able to kind of balance out both areas. You're winning, but you need labor. The people that are not winning, they need jobs. So we can figure this out.
Yeah, that's helpful. Teresa, do you want to add something on this idea of what's the obligation of those who have actually not suffered as much?
Yeah, I would love to. And it's a really thought-provoking question. I appreciate you asking it, Natalie. One of the things, so my role in economic development, we try to understand what it is that makes Utah unique. And how then can we take those unique qualities of the state and turn them into opportunity, economic opportunity for corporations, for households, for individuals. And I don't think it's a surprise, it won't come as a surprise to anyone on this call, that our volunteerism is something as a community that makes us incredibly unique. And so there is, I believe, amongst the general business community, amongst community partners in higher ed and in our educational institutions, and certainly amongst nonprofits, that there is a need and an obligation to provide some sort of a give back as a result of having been a beneficiary or having not been at the bottom slope of that K-shape. And between Heidi and me, we could share probably hundreds of examples of companies who were on the top end of that K-shape who said, I'm gonna go out and make a quiet donation of KN95 masks because I have them for my industry and I'm gonna give those to healthcare workers. Or we're gonna quietly fund some sort of a morale boost in by providing lunch to healthcare workers. Or we're going to create the fund that Heidi referenced to enable grant making and giving. The interesting thing to me is for those who were not on the high end of that K-shape who decided to do it anyway. So tourism and other impacted industries who said, you know what, we've benefited over the years and we're just gonna do the right thing regardless of the fact that this economy has hurt us and suffered greatly. And so, you know, I love my job because I get to hear about these stories and then it's our job to go out and tell other people about it. But there is an obligation both by those who have not suffered as greatly, I believe, in the pandemic, but I love seeing those who really give a widow's mite because they can and it's part of the Utah ethic.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Teresa. I mean, this begs us to go to you to give us an example of a chamber member that's benefited or that's done fairly well during this difficult time, who's reached across to a member or an industry that suffered. Do you have any good examples of that in at the Salt Lake Chamber?
Yeah, so early on, I think it was really surprising. I guess it was heartwarming what Teresa was mentioning, that businesses were reaching out to us saying, where can I help? Where can I help right now? Even as recently as during the vaccine, businesses reaching out saying, how do I help the health department? How do I help through this process? One large company came forward with a significant donation and it was targeted, as I mentioned, through the Main Street grants to rural and minority in the tourism industries. And I think the interesting story that came back out of that were the responses back from the recipients where they said, okay, now it's my turn. I can use a little bit about what I received to help somebody else. You know, I was able to split this with my, you know, someone across the street from me in the workplace that really needed it as well. And so I do think that as part of our who we are as Utahns and our ability to just continue to think of others. I watched a couple of companies early on, DP Skis up in Northern Utah, who innovated and partnered with other companies to say, we can do this and you can do that. And together we can do great things for our community. So I think it's been very inspiring to hear these amazing stories that people aren't just taking funding or resources, but they're looking to share that with others.
Yeah, that's great. So Peter, I'm gonna go back to you because you're able to really set such great context for us. President Biden signed the American Rescue Act. It's, I don't remember, it's $1.7 some odd trillion dollars. First of off, just as an economist, I'm thinking of Goldilocks. Did he get it too much, too little, or just about right in terms of this stimulus that's coming out?
When you get a PhD in economics, they also give you a crystal ball. But it's foggy and cloudy and cracked. And but we all have one, and we all look into them, and we all bloviate with them. And I could go ahead and do that right now. And the truthful answer is one of the problems we face is we don't know what the future holds. I'm a big fan of continuing to try to stimulate the economy. When I look at the charts, the downturn was intense. The upturn has not been completed. And so there is more for the government to do. But there's also a big challenge that we as individuals or businesses face. And that is to answer the question, are we going back to yesterday or are we going forward into an unknown tomorrow? I have some opinions about where higher education goes. And the story I would tell would be a brave new world where there'd be a lot more Zoom meetings just like this. Every industry is wondering, will commercial real estate come back? What's gonna happen to restaurants? And for the people on the lower leg of that K, they're not only facing adversity, they're facing uncertainty. As to whether if they brought their A game to this problem, should they be aiming to resurrect what they had, or should they be aiming at something totally different? And it's human nature want to reestablish what had worked. But the problem is this economy will restructure and tomorrow will be a new normal. The stimulus from the federal government is going to help bring the economy back, but it is not going to help answer the question, what is that economy going to look like? And therefore, my crystal ball stays cracked and people don't have a clear map of where they should send their efforts. And that's one of the really tough things that we're all facing today.
So Peter, I'm gonna go to both Sylvia and Teresa here because I've worked with them behind the scenes with our whatever crystal ball we have to really think about if we build economy back to better, what does it look like? And I'll remind people to go ahead, submit your questions because we're gonna go to questions in just a little bit here. But Sylvia and Teresa, we've spent time behind the scenes thinking about how to give good advice to Utah decision makers on the next economy. Teresa, you've not hesitated to talk about rapid reskilling and upskilling, but Sylvia, you're on mic, so I'll go to you first. What do we need to do to be ready for that next economy?
What's hard is that I think I do agree that we're going to have a new normal. I think most people wish that eventually there will be the switch and then we're back to February 2020, but that scenario is gone. The reality is because of what we have faced, there's a lot of inequalities that came forth. Also, overnight, it seems, the consumer moved to a whole new expectation in terms of being able to do things more comfortably from home, be able to do things online. And I just don't see society going back to what we had before, because now there's new comforts, new expectations. And the challenge is, how do we help people pivot to that? How do we, because it's not just surviving, but being able to ensure that they have the right skill set, that they understand the new business models that they have to implement to make it. And that's the hard thing, because with human nature, we tend to go back to what we worked before, but that scenario is completely gone. So as we talked about this crystal ball and trying to figure out what do we need to do next, I think one of the biggest understanding is that we're not starting at the same line, that there are inequalities and they have to be addressed. And I am hopeful. I can see this as an opportunity. I think this could really be an opportunity for the state to really look at those inequalities and use the funding that we're getting to resolve them, to be able to move people into a much better position. So they're not stuck. So next time everything gets shut down and people are not able to go home, this could be an opportunity where we can upskill them so they have the availability, the ability to do that. So I do remain hopeful in that regard.
Yeah, I like your hope. Sylvia, or sorry, Teresa, give us your wisdom on this. Are you optimistic? Are you hopeful about this next economy? You mentioned the fourth industrial revolution. Do you see Utah well positioned there?
Well, like Sylvia, I am incredibly hopeful for the future of the state's economy and our national economy as well. These are major shifts that are occurring. And I want to underscore that they're occurring. This is not happening in the future. We don't have a year to prepare for it. Supply chains are getting shorter. Automation is being designed into new facilities. And the pace at which companies are moving, innovating, and accelerating has not slowed down at all. But I think Utah is in a unique position because we are proximate to some major US markets. We still have a quality of life arbitrage for those households that would like to have a little bit more elbow room. We have a great sense of community here. And of course, our economic outlook is among the brightest of any state in the union. And so I am incredibly hopeful. But I also share in the concern of others that very bright future may not look as bright for all. And that's where I have always encouraged our state leaders, and I applaud many of the investments, major public investments that were made during this last legislative session, which included transit and mobility, which included housing preservation and affordability, which included significant investments in workforce development and training, and which included what is now, we've called it the information superhighway for forever. And that feels all the more true as many of us, and I especially see on this screen, have zoomed into this from our basement or bedroom. Having that access to be able to learn, work, telehealth, start a business online is just incredibly important. And so I'm both hopeful, and I think we'll all continue to encourage our state leaders to make those smart long-term investments in public goods that will benefit those who might be at risk of not being able to continue to work their way up the economic ladder, which again has been a strength of Utah with our economic mobility indices being very strong as compared to the country.
Teresa, thanks for the observation. And I'm gonna just underline, put in bold that what the Utah legislature just did was really impressive. And partly because they had a lot of resources, but Teresa clicked them off: transit, housing, training. A lot of really important things happened. Heidi, I know that the Salt Lake Chamber has something called the Roadmap to Recovery. We've helped with that at the Gardner Institute. But I'd love you to just describe what that is. How does it help? I think it would be helpful to the viewers.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. So back in August, we formed what's called the Roadmap to Recovery Coalition. We all were so reliant on government in those first few months to direct us in what we needed to do. And we know in this community that our experience has always been that when businesses lean in, great things happen. So we launched this Roadmap to Recovery Coalition. It's a statewide business plan to, build our economic recovery. It's an effort to inspire confidence in the consumer and confidence in our economy. And one of the first things we did was to partner with Natalie and the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute to create an economic dashboard with real-time information that businesses could use. And I'll pop that in the chat in just a moment. We all knew that everything was moving so quickly, and things that would take 6 months, a year, or 3 years to make a decision on, we're moving in 24 hours or 12 hours to make those quick decisions. And so this dashboard is really helpful to our business community. It includes everything from CEO confidence measures, consumer confidence measures, industry breakdowns and changes, vaccine distribution, and other relevant data. And I think that would be really helpful for you. This group also realized that with all the resources out and available to everyone, that there wasn't really a targeted resource page or instructions for businesses to know what to do. Because again, we're all doing this for the first time. So we put together the vaccine resource page. I'll put that link in our chat as well to help businesses navigate through the vaccine rollout and provide tools. We additionally did some information training. And in fact, last week we partnered with EDC Utah and Teresa's team to produce the Vax Facts webinar with the Lieutenant Governor and with the Department of Health and local health departments to help businesses know how to volunteer, to help them also access information on creating their own in-house clinics, employer clinics to, you know, help in the process of making sure everyone gets vaccinated. So that's just a quick overview of Roadmap to Recovery.
That was Heidi Walker, Chief Operating Officer for the Salt Lake Chamber. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Anthony Scoma. In this final segment, the panel answers questions from the virtual audience. Once more, here is your moderator, Natalie Gochner, Director of the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute.
So our focus has really been COVID-19 and Utah's workforce, the ethics of employment. It turns out that we're getting some questions from our viewers, and so I'll encourage more to come in. But one of the first questions is, what do the panelists think the government's role should be in stimulating the recovery? So we've had this pandemic, we've had a shock to the system, we've had the employment impacts of it. What is government's role here? I'm tempted, Peter, to have you set that up, and it looks like the other panelists would love you to do that.
When the pandemic hit, if the federal government had done nothing, and if the Federal Reserve had done nothing, we would still be at a bottom with 15% of all jobs lost. Capitalism is great when it's hitting on all cylinders. But when it starts choking, there are oftentimes negative spirals that come into play, and those negative spirals take a very long time to overcome. We know this from the Great Depression, we know this from the Great Recession, and we have seen this time around that the immediacy and the force of not only the US federal government, but governments in the rich countries around the world in responding to the pandemic downturn with economic stimulus has made this a situation where the panelists here can be optimistic. It's a lot easier to be optimistic where we are now than where we were in April and May. So the government plays a crucial role. Now, obviously, governments can make mistakes, and time will tell whether mistakes have been made or are about to be made. Looking back at the Great Recession, there's now a general consensus that the stimulus at that time, which was a little bit south of $1 trillion, was not enough. And at the time, there was a great deal of concern that that stimulus would create inflation, and it didn't. This time around, the stimulus is twice as large, and the question is that enough? And the question is, will that create inflation? Time will tell. My best guess is I'm betting against future inflation, and I'm betting that we're going to have some more stimulus, not of this magnitude, but within about a year from now. But that, like I said, remember what my crystal ball looks like. It looks like a cloudy, cracked crystal.
Okay, other panelists, would you like to weigh in on the role of government during a pandemic?
You know, I have an interesting perspective on the role of government because we saw it from the federal and also the state. I think it was basically whoever received the funding was part of the K-shape that went up. But at the same time, I think there was one of the issues was we were literally building the bridge we were walking on. So there were mistakes in the beginning. One of the mistakes, for example, at the state level, is that no diverse voices were completely missing when some decisions were made. And I think that was a huge lesson to the state of Utah and some local governments, that when you don't have enough people in the room to give you a different perspective, mistakes can be made. But it has been really good how the state has actually overcame. I think government has a role, but at the same time, we're living interesting economic times, because if you look at what we're looking at in compared to any other recession we had in the past, it's almost like, what other economic tools do we use? We have interest rates the lowest they've ever been. We have enough cash flow going out. We have trillions and trillions of funding that is going out. But at the same time, it's like, what is next? And I think that's what's hard, that no one really knows, because we haven't had anything at all like it. And what's tough about this is that health and economics are tied together. Things don't get better economically until health gets taken care of. Until COVID cases go down, until we get this pandemic under control, we could be spending this from then, who knows? Until we get this pandemic under control, it's hard to be able to really determine like what's next. And that's what's really hard about this.
Peter, it sounds like Sylvia says her crystal ball's a little foggy as well. So you're in good company. Teresa, I'm just tempted to have you add to the government's role from the standpoint. Teresa interacts with state leaders all the time. They all care what she thinks, what her opinion is. What do you tell leaders about government's role and the stimulus? What counsel are you providing?
Well, if I remember one thing from my undergrad economics, it's that incentives matter. And that was one thing that, again, to Sylvia's point, we were building. I love the way you've said that, Sylvia, building this bridge as we were walking across it. The government stimulus, both at the state and the federal levels, was critically important. And we would absolutely not be where we are today, as Peter has said, without it. What took time and what I think we ultimately got to was providing the right incentives for people to do the right thing. And so as I've thought about the stimulus, it was how could we have incentivized better health behavior to encourage better health outcomes, which would have therefore improved the state of the economy quicker. And that would be my sort of, hey, if this is not a 100-year event, and I hope that it certainly was a 100-year event, it may not be, but that if we learn from where government stimulus can be effective, it is in ensuring that incentives are what we need them to be? And I don't mean that, but in the sense of tax incentives, I mean, how are you trying to change behavior through the financial carrots that you're putting out there?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Teresa. Peter, I think you're the best one to deal with this question. We have an audience question that says, what do we owe the employees who were hurt? So rather than focusing on the businesses, what do we owe the employees who were hurt? How should employees have been protected in the pandemic? So a real employee focus.
Employees wear two hats. They are not only the people that make the economy work by working. They are also the vast majority of people that make the economy work by consuming. And what we owe those workers are two things. First, we owe them security. And second, we owe them an ability to continue their role as consumers as well as workers. That's not only going to help them, that's going to help everybody. So these $1,200 stimulus checks, unemployment insurance support are all there because that's what we owe them, not just as workers, but also as consumers. In addition to that, we also owe them, those that are continuing to go to work, that they can come home safely. We owe it to them that going to work should not imperil their health. And so we need to have a system that ensures that when people go to work, they go to a place that is safe and healthy for them. So in short, we owe them security, we owe them health, we owe helping them do their job, which is to have a job and work, and to do their job by also joining in purchasing the products and services of that work.
Thanks, Peter. Sylvia, I think this question is probably best for you. The person's asking about businesses that opened in 2020. So they didn't have that history and many were not eligible for financial support. What's the likelihood that they may be included in future assistance programs? Have you dealt with that at the Suazo Center?
Yeah, we have dealt with this a lot. We have seen business that that started either, actually the worst ones were the ones that started in February. We had businesses turn February 2020 and then the rug was pulled from under them just a few weeks later.
And that's really bad luck, isn't it?
It's horrible. And some of them were restaurants, like brand new locations into downtown. And this is where downtown all of a sudden became a ghost town because everybody went back home. And the hardest thing for that is that there was nothing. All of every incentive, the PPP loan, everything that came up, there had to be some type of track record. Well, if your track record is you were open for a few weeks and then economy fell down, there was nothing. And we haven't really seen anything after that. But what's been interesting is, and this is where we worked a lot with the small businesses, it's we had to help them pivot fast. They had to either change into more creative ways to service their clients, or we had to maybe shift them to a completely different customer segment. But what's been interesting that we have seen this whole time, and it really, it's fascinating to us, is we help businesses be created and also grow. We never stopped receiving requests to start up new businesses. Even in the height of when everything seemed to be going wrong for small businesses, we still have people see an opportunity. We still have people say, you know what, I think there's something I can do with my business, or I can change, or I can serve a need. And I think also that also speaks to the resilience of our state. Is that even though, and they knew that there wouldn't be any help or assistance because they were starting from scratch, but they still begun. One of the hardest things is that a lot of those businesses that started in January, February, they either pivoted or they just did not make it. By now, every resource out there was just not available to them. So now it's really just kind of keeping the ones that were up and going by 2019, This last round of PPP has been so completely different from the last one. And all the existing businesses that were there in 2019 have the leg up. There's really nothing much for the ones that were open in January, February 2020.
So glad we have the Suazo Business Center. Thanks for all you do, Sylvia. We're down to just about 9 more minutes. And I'm wanting to just ask each of you to just end out this discussion by sharing with me a lesson you've learned. And Teresa, I'm going to go to you first. What's a lesson that you've learned through this historic time in our economic world, in our health world, in our, you know, world together as human beings? What is a lesson you've learned?
Well, thanks again, Natalie. You've asked me a series of really thought-provoking questions, and I'm sure, like a lot of the other panelists, especially as we marked the 1-year anniversary of sending our team into virtual work last week on Friday, I've spent a lot of time reflecting on things that I've learned, what went right, what I'd do differently. And the main thing that I would say is I've learned the value of adaptability. And I say that on the applicability of that is on so many different fronts, but I've been so fortunate to lead a team that adapted so quickly to taking our core competencies of research and project management and applying them in a way that could benefit our community and the community response. I've seen it in the community and these businesses that did start in 2020 who just said, you know what, we're just going to cowboy up as, and figure it out. Or I've seen it with creating new relationships with groups that I never had a deep connection to, but who I now realize really help turn the knobs in our economy. And so just the value of adaptability is a lesson that I'll take going forward and hope to be able to apply and again in our organization and in my personal life and in our career, as I think adapting is going to be the name of the game going forward, where our world is changing much more quickly.
Mm, yeah, great observation, Teresa. Heidi, what about from your vantage point? What have you learned as you've gone through this pandemic?
You know, I think the one thing that's so interesting, it was the one thing in my history that bonded all of us. We were all worldwide going through the same thing. Of course, we all approached it differently. But, you know, Peter, Professor Phillips mentioned the new economy. I think the skills that we learned in the last year launched us and were more prepared for our new economy than we probably ever would have been, even if we'd planned for it. So I would say that, you know, adding on to what Teresa's saying about adaptability, I think just the common understanding, we now have a new launch pad for great things to come if we'll just approach it in that way. So I think for me, there's good things that we learned, hard things, but they made us better.
Mm, I like that. Sylvia, I'm gonna come to you next and then we'll give Peter the last word before we sign off, but go ahead, Sylvia.
I think if anything we all learned from 2020 is resilience. It frankly, we have all been through, it's one of the things that we have all been through it. And one of the things we used to tell our kids is like, we're living history. We're living history in so many ways. And I think it's exceptional that we all came together because we all knew we were going through it together. But at the same time, I mean, there was a lot thrown at us, not just pandemic-wise. We had an earthquake, we had a windstorm. I mean, it's almost like, okay, what next? But we have the skill set now that I think we can handle anything. And also we learn, and along the ways we made some mistakes, we learn from them. And I think that's gonna be hugely helpful in terms of the growth of this state. There was a lot of new partnerships made. Everybody came together to be like, how do we survive this? And one of the things that I think I'm very proud to have been part of is a lot of the economic decisions were based on data. It wasn't about we think, we feel. There was actual data that we looked at least as often as we could, and decisions were made that way. And I think that's a little bit of the Utah difference and how we're coming ahead better compared to other states.
All right. I like that, Sylvia. Peter, what have you learned through all this? You said you've been through 15 of these. What have you learned?
I miss human contact. I miss my students. I haven't hugged my daughter since March 8, 2020. I want to go back to the classroom, but I know I'm not going to go back to the classroom that I had been in for almost 45 years at the University of Utah. And that's because I have students at the moment in China, in Europe, in Florida. I Zoom with them, I talk to them, I interact with them the way I've been interacting with you, and that's going to continue. It's not going to be everything. I will see some students in the flesh, but there will be students that I will never see in the flesh. And I want to take a moment in this consideration of innovation and, you know, and floating like a butterfly and stinging like a bee, and mourn some of the things that we have lost forever. And one of the things I think we have lost, at least in part, is the kind of human contact that I, as a teacher, expected as the normal forever. And now that normal is, to some extent, gone.
Yeah. I'm going to just add that one of the lessons I've learned is the limitations of government. And I think government's done amazing things, just amazing things during the pandemic, but it still couldn't spare us, you know, all of the trouble that we've had. And it takes everything to get through a pandemic.
That's our show. If you'd like to hear another Hinckley Forum, you can find it on our website, kcpw.org. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Anthony Scoma, your producer and host of this program. As always, thanks for listening.